Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/auctionpodcast for your free audiobook download. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Antique Auction Podcast. This is Martin Willis.
And Phyllis Gall.
Okay, today we're here with Dave Shaw in the Berkeley Hills. We couldn't bring Mohammed to the mountain, so we brought the mountain to Mohammed. Dave Shaw, welcome.
Dave Shaw is a very special
man. It's good to be here. All my glory.
And just to set up the scene, we're in the bottom floor of Dave's incredible place in the Berkeley Hills.
The dungeon.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a lovely... this is the most lovely dungeon I've ever seen.
Yes,
we're overlooking... Right here, huh?
yes, by the way, listener discretion, this may have some adult content. We're overlooking the bay, the San Francisco Bay, and Dave's mother was an antique dealer. He's been a dealer. What did you just say a few minutes ago? You've avoided work all your life?
But people say that I'm the hardest, worker they've ever seen. But I think the whole idea of work is when you get up in the morning and if you don't want to go, you don't go. I mean, as opposed to a regular job. And I found, in this business, that's why I liked it so much. Because I'll wake up even to this day to go to the flea market and I'll say, yeah, I don't feel like it. So I don't do it. Because if I go out there and I don't feel like it, I don't find anything. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be there.
Right?
Yeah, right. So, Dave, why don't you tell us about, you were in a rock band years ago, right?
I played in a lot of bands growing up in Southern California. And
do you have any tattoos?
Pretty cool. Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll keep it there.
I have Wendy tattooed now. It's a really bad joke, but I'll tell you after we get off of this. Right there.
Oh, nice. That was really nice. You guys are missing out.
Yeah. It actually looks like a daisy now, but it was actually a nuclear thing. You know, it's all faded into a daisy. I guess this is about 40 years ago.
That's really symbolic, Dave.
I'm going to put a little stem in a flower pot.
Are you going to make a daisy chain, perhaps?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Don't you have a kid named Daisy?
I have a dog named Daisy.
Oh, there you go.
This is a kid, actually.
All right, this show is not about Daisy, so let's continue.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So you're in rock bands. You played with someone from the Flying Burrito Brothers?
I played with a band called Mother's Pride. I played with Ambrosia for a while.
Ambrosia.
I played with Edgar Winter one time. But I was in a band called Mother's Pride, and I played in a band called Trigger, which is a Southern California.
I've heard of Trigger.
It was pretty fun. Mm. But we used to travel all around the country, and I would, just go to thrift stores and buy cool stuff because I'd grown up with cool stuff. My mother used to go to antique shows and drag me with her because my father worked night and my brother was in college. And I just got into deco, really early on.
Really?
Because it wasn't... It was
wasn't really popular, was it, though? Deco?
No. Nobody, I don't even think it was called deco in the 60s. I don't think it got called art deco until, show at the Minneapolis
Didn't they used to call it the Depression era furniture? A lot of times you've heard that.
Or jazz age.
Machine
age. I think it got turned later on. But I just liked it because it was just so, it was old, but yet it was new. You know what I mean? It just had this really
modern,
cool vibe.
Yeah.
And I had grown up a lot, watching Busby Berkeley movies.
Mm.
Those Busby Berkeley movies and stuff like that. I was just really intrigued by that stuff for some reason. And maybe it was my gene,
Your what gene?
My gay gene.
Gay gene. That's okay. Everything's acceptable on the show.
But that gene never took effect by
I know. Don't you have three wives or something?
Four.
Four. Who's counting?
Yeah,
who's counting? Well, number three is counting.
Her money. Yes.
So it was really funny because I would go to the flea markets and it was just nobody wanted this crap. It was still junk in the 60s. And a lot of it's still junk, but a lot of it was just really cool stuff, and I just bought all this deco, and I met two or three guys that were into it. They were all gay, and I just thought they were maybe I'm gay, but I decided I wasn't. I go, I really like
You just really like deco.
I just like deco. Jesus.
So where did you put all this stuff you were accumulating at the time? Where did you sell? Did you?
No, nobody would buy it. I mean, I just piled it up. I moved out in like 69. My aunt, I had a great aunt that left me a house at the beach in Redondo.
Oh,
house.
Nice.
With five garages. So that would give me a place to just pile full of crap.
That's what every dealer needs.
Just I was just piling in. I had rock star money, so I didn't, you know, and I just liked the stuff, and I had it all around, and nobody wanted it. And then it caught on, and I had a friend who I actually grew up with named Mike Hoffey, and Mike Hoffey was in the antique clothing business in the 60s in Manhattan Beach. Mm-hmm. And I met him when I was 16. I think he was a little bit older than me, like maybe 17 at the most. And he was into old clothes. And then when I was making money playing music, I gave him money to start up a clothing.
Wait a minute. So how old were you when you were making money in music?
16, 17.
Is that right? Wow. And what instrument did you play?
I played guitar.
Guitar.
Of course. Can't you just tell?
Yeah.
I can sort of tell, yeah.
Come on, look at this face. Is this a guitar player's face or what? Do I look like a bass player? Come on.
I almost took you for drums for some reason.
No, drums. I had a higher IQ. No offense to all you drummers.
My son's a drummer.
There's a joke about that where the guy's like got really big and the guitar player's up there playing and he's like going, wow, I'm going to be on the cover of a Guitar Player magazine with all the women in the world and all this stuff. And then the drummer's up there and he said, I'm going to be on Drummer magazine, and I got all these women, and I'm going to be a star, and then it goes to the organ player, and then it goes to the bass player, and the bass player going like E, A, E. Anyway, it's a musician's show.
I'm a musician, Dave, did you know?
Are you? You're not a trumpet player, no. Trombone player, are you?
No, trombone player.
What does Phyllis look like for a music player?
Viola.
Violinist.
I started playing the drums recently, so.
Well, there you go.
And back to the drummer thing.
What's the difference between a dead trombone player and a dead snake in the road? Chances are the snake was on his way to a gig.
That's right, yeah.
All right, I'm going to fix the trombone player.
That's cool. A lawyer joke or something. Okay.
All right, anyway, so I...
Gave money to your friend to open up his shop.
Yeah, my friend got into the youth clothing business. Then he got into manufacturing new clothes. Mm-hmm. And now this guy's a really famous painter. This guy just did everything. See, Mike Hoffey. He just showed at the Venice Biennale.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm still close to him. I've known him since I was 16. Wow. And he told me in like the early 70s that he had like, when he decided to get into the garment business at that point, that he had talked to some really old people that had been in the business for years, and they told him the one thing you got to remember is styles recycle every 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, deco, and about this time, like 71, 72, deco, they did a show at the Minneapolis Institute on deco, so deco started becoming hip, and people, you know, I mean, there were a lot of people into it, it just was very, very thin then.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like hit. And I remember him telling me that styles recycle every 20 years, and I went, like, what's the next big, like, if you go back in time to, like, the, you know, you go to Art Nouveau, and you go to Art Deco, what was the next really big movement? And it was, you know, mid-century modern, what they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Post-war modernism. So I said, I should start buying that up. Mm. So I just went to all the flea markets, and I really didn't know a lot because... there wasn't, the only kind of information you had on this stuff at the time was in contemporary magazines and stuff of the era. Mm-hmm. And it's not like now, when you go to the computer, you can find anything. Right. And so I just bought everything that looked kind of whacked out and cool, and I just filled my garages full of it. Mm.
This is going all the way back to when?
This is probably like 70s, early 70s.
So you were, now at that time in the 70s, I remember just turning, going into these houses full of mid-century and saying, sorry, we can't help you. You know, we could not get a penny for this.
No, you couldn't. And you could buy, like, really cool, which were cool then, Eames chairs for, like, nothing. Wow. Nothing. But, you know, you couldn't get anything for it.
Yeah.
But I remember going to the Saugus flea market. My band was going out to we were going out, we used to go out to Randsburg, out on Pear Blossom Highway, to this little bar. Hmm. And we used to stop at the Saugus Flea Market. And I remember this guy had these, like, pristine, all plywood Eames low chairs. And they were, like, well, you know, like, 5-6 years ago, they were, like, $1,500.
Yeah.
Of course, they've gone down now. But remember the guy had two of them, and they were $10 a piece.
Oh, my God.
I bought them because, look, I got 40 more of them in my garage. And I said, well, I'll buy them. Give me your phone number. And he goes, I don't want to give you my phone number. I'll bring them out here next week. And I said, well, I don't really get out to Saugus that much, you know?
He had 40? Did you say 40? 40?
Yeah, 40 of them in his garage. So I bought the two. But anyway, so I just piled in my garages. I said piles and piles of it. And I had a friend who had a shop down the street called the, it was a brass bed store. But actually, it was more of
Do you remember when brass beds were the thing? $1,200 brass
bed. Well, that's because the handcuffs you clip to them so easy.
That's what it is, huh?
Because the what?
The handcuffs you clip to them.
Oh, I see.
Well, now they're $50 and people still use handcuffs, so I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
I don't know. What's up with that?
Well, I don't know.
So, I had a friend of mine who kind of got it. He kind of followed what I did, and he got into 50 stuff, and he met some Japanese businessmen who were opening a restaurant with the like Elvis type theme, and they wanted to buy 50 stuff. So that's when all of a sudden you realize that people wanted to buy the stuff. So they would come to my garage. They'd spend like $3,000-$4,000 on literally crap. I mean, to me it wasn't crap, but it was, I mean, the whole world thought it was crap.
Now, was any of this, like, in periodicals? Were you seeing it anywhere, like, advertised?
No, it wasn't. It just hadn't.
We're still going in this. We're still talking the 70s because...
Yeah, so you're like...
Yeah, well, the 70s is what happened back then, is when Deco got so popular in that period from that Minneapolis show until the late 70s, that it became disco. Mm-hmm. And, like, then all the discotheques became... Really, Deco. I mean, they copied the Deco style, which is another thing with the styles recycling. And we called it Disco Deco. I mean, you could go to, like, Homeowners Emporium and buy really, which are now valuable or have a little bit of value, Deco lamps.
Yeah.
You know, that were reproduced, so.
So did you have enough Deco to make some money at that time?
Oh, yeah.
You had enough Deco to get through that to get into the modern.
Yeah. I had a ton of it. I mean, I just had tons of it.
Jeez.
Well, really good stuff, too. I mean, it wasn't like, crap. I mean, I sold the crap. I kept the good stuff. Mm-hmm.
So how did you, since no one was really into it, how did you discern the good items from the...
Well, you kind of like, after a while, after you do it for a certain period of time, you meet people.
Oh, you get knowledge that way.
Yeah, you meet people, and then you meet somebody, and then you meet somebody, and then you meet somebody, and then you realize that I met through a friend of mine. This guy, Paul Tiberio, had a Deco store in Hollywood in the 70s, and he was, like, selling to Jack Nicholson and Barbara Streisand and Elton John and Rod Stewart. They were all into it, and they were buying it up.
So that's how you knew how to price your own thing?
Yeah, and so... In fact, if there's one of the Rod Stewart albums that was put out in the 70s where it shows him sitting in his living room, it was all Deco, really great Deco. And Streisand was a real famous Deco collector, as was Elton John, in the 70s. Mm-hmm. But like buying the really, really good high-end stuff, which was, a lot of money then, but cheap by today's standards.
Well, I remember when I, years ago in New England, hearing... In Texas, people were collecting Deco, and that's the first I'd heard of it. And it was like, being on East Coast, you don't hear much about, like, California or what's going on. But I do remember there was a guy hauling loads of Art Deco furniture out of New England to Texas.
Yeah, there was a couple of... There was a guy, I can't remember his name, but he was a billionaire. And I had met this guy who actually claimed he played football for the Chicago Bears, and he was... pottery dealer, but like an Art Nouveau dealer and a Tiffany dealer, and it was kind of like branching into Deco. And he had told me about this guy that was in Texas that was just a billionaire, and he was buying up all the Deco he could. And like, this is in like 73, 74.
Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. Way back then.
I think the guy's name was John Meekum or something like that. And I don't know what he did, oil man or something. But it's so funny in this day and age that it's everybody, I mean, not making, putting like a damper on this and everything, but, you know, a lot of, like, we're talking about gay people collected really great debt over the years. And I knew a lot of, you know, gay people that just had the greatest collections in the world. And it's just like, and they die off and it just disappears. It just doesn't exist anymore. Really good deco is just doesn't exist anymore. It just doesn't come on the market. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the heck it could be. It's just how, like, you know?
Right. Well, I always wonder what happens to, you know, I mean, it seems like when, say, a trend fades away, what happens when something, unless it's something major, it's really, there's no splash if it comes available.
You know? Yeah, it's hard to call. I mean, there are some really, really, really hardcore trends that just, you wake up the next day and they're over, like the cowboy crap.
Well, oh, yes.
You know, like the cowboy furniture. There's Molesworth is still, I'm sure, pretty valuable Molesworth furniture. But, you know, all that cowboy stuff was just so hot for a period there. And then it's just like you wake up one day and it's like nobody wants it anymore. Mm-hmm.
So we'll continue on your story. But just while we're at this juncture right now, what do you think the next trend, since you've had your remark pretty good?
Well, the thing of it is like every... If you look at the like the 70s, the Brady Bunch look and stuff like that, that's kind of cool. But, you know, they've all pretty much basically stole from every other trend before them, which to me is like music. It's like you listen to music and I can tell you. Even artwork. I mean, you know, I can look at a painting and tell you how many people, you know, influence this painter. And Man Ray had said even in the 50s, at that point, every painting is influenced by five artists. And now, like, you know, in the, you know, the 21st century, I look at a painting, everybody steals from everybody. And it's the same way in the music business.
Yeah.
And it's the same way in the furniture business. I mean, it's just been going on for so long. And you look at, like, 70s and 80s and 90s stuff, and there's always some kind of little... you know, thievery in there. But I think that Memphis furniture is like really, you know, should be a lot more valuable than
Memphis,
yeah, the really good stuff. The really, really, and that seemed to like kind of like not.
What is not Memphis furniture?
Memphis furniture. It's like this Memphis, I don't know. Just really crazy, whacked out furniture that was done in Italy in the 70s.
Oh.
By Sottsass, and I think Peter Shire designed for them, and a lot of famous people, of course they weren't famous then, designed for them, just really kind of whacked out, really colorful stuff, and crazy, you know, that stuff should be, the real Memphis stuff should be worth a fortune, but then again, it's not that much of it around.
Now, I noticed, since I've seen some wonderful pieces that you found in, say, thrift stores and places like that. I've seen you walk into an auction gallery with a $4 or $5 price tag on something worth several thousand dollars. I just want to, at some point in this conversation, how do you find these things? I mean, you have a great eye, but on art was art a part of your gig, because you really know art pretty
well. Yeah, no, art was, I had a cousin, it was my father's cousin. And Bob Sin, gay guy. Nothing wrong with this.
Yeah.
But real meticulous. He worked for CBS. And he, I remember when me and my brother were little kids, every week the postman would bring us a stack of LPs of all the latest music that my cousin Bob had sent us, because he worked for CBS Records. And so we went up to visit him in the sick. We used to go visit him. He lived in Hollywood, go figure. And we go visit him. I remember going to visit him. I remember he had, like, really cool stylish. He was very stylish and together. And I remember he had, like, a stack of art forums on his coffee table. And I remember looking at the art forums, and the art forums at that particular, in the early 60s, were basically California art and stuff. And I remember looking at the art forums and thinking, like, and at this point I was probably like 11, thinking that, wow, these are better than comic books, you know?
Wow.
And so they really intrigued me. They really intrigued me. I don't know exactly, I can't pinpoint one exact article or something, but, or maybe it was a Bruce Conner with a, you know, bunch of crap, you know, garbage glued to a piece of canvas. So I don't remember what it was, but Anyway, so like 6 months later, my uncle and my mother's father's cousin get me a lifetime subscription to Art Forum. So every month I get my Art Forum, and it just would be like getting, you know, a comic book, but better.
Yeah.
And so that's how I learned about artwork.
I see.
I've seen you walk in up to a painting before you even get there, and you know who it is.
Yeah, that's just one of those things. I have a photographic memory.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, which is kind of bad sometimes, too.
Yeah.
One guy told me one time, because you've had a real exciting life. I go, well, everybody has an exciting life. It's just they don't remember it like I do. And, of course, some of them I like to forget.
Yeah, I was going to say, it could be a curse. So, you know.
Yeah, but no, I have a photographic memory, and I don't know how that, you know. And what was your name again? The thing with paintings, I mean, like, furniture's cool and everything, and I know a lot of people, and I know a lot of wealthy people, and I know, like, for years and years, there was a, you would go, like, to an auction house, and you know, like, a Joe Ponte dining table would sell for $200,000, and I had a friend of mine in Chicago who was a auctioneer, and he would sell his stuff, and he would, like, he would instruct on delivering. I mean, you know, when you sell something at an auction, you make sure when they pay $200,000 that you know, it gets delivered properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was telling me one time, he goes, you know, like, for all these big penthouses in Chicago and all around, I deliver this, like, $200,000-$300,000 pieces of furniture, and I go in and they got crap hanging on the walls. Like Calder posters, which is no offense to you Calder poster collectors, but he goes, and I realize that there's this parallel world between decorative art and fine arts. I mean, these guys, like I say, spent millions of dollars on this really great mid-century or designer furniture.
Right.
And then they have shit hanging on their walls.
Now, was this was not in just one place? This was in several places?
Several places. People, like, you know, would tell me this. And then...
Wait, can I say shit? I guess we can. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Shit.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. All right. Yeah. So, and then I knew all these people had these amazing paintings and sculptures and stuff. And they had, like, shit furniture. You know, I mean, it's just a weird. And then, you know, and then I met people that are actually like Michael Boyd. I don't know Michael Boyd. He's a great collector from Berkeley that lives in L.A. now. He was this guy that got the great art and the great furniture and put it together and made it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird world. But I was always more into paintings and furniture.
Really?
I was always more into artwork and furniture. Mm. It was more artwork, you know, because it's all not prints. Yeah, not prints. I hate prints. Although Purple Rain is a really great album.
No, what about the Calder poster right over here on your wall?
Yeah, oh, that one.
Yeah.
Took that out of Chicago.
I was just, and I told this to, I've told this to people before, and the thing with art, and I don't mean like Bev Doolittle prints either, but just when you're sitting there, I mean, when you go to a museum and you stand in front of a painting and look at it, and you go to the next one and you look at it, and you go to the next one, you know. That's one thing. When you wake up in the morning and you put your underwear on with a masterpiece hanging over your bed, it's really cool. Really, really cool. It's a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
When did you buy your first piece of important artwork?
Painting? I bought...
And was it important then?
Yeah. I bought a Feininger drawing at Sotheby's on Beverly Boulevard. I paid $600 for it.
Huh. And how old were you?
I was like 17 or 16.
Is that when you, what's your youngest you'd say that you bought some, 16, 17?
You mean like art or drugs? I never did drugs, so I was, I never did. I honestly did.
Yeah. He just winked at us, by the way.
Is glue like that?
I just for record, Dave Shaw is lying down. He's been lying down for this entire interview.
Yes. Wait, this is my shrink's office? Where am I?
So how does that make you feel?
I didn't know. He was only 16.
So
17, you bought that.
Oh, let's see. No, let me think. Just some little something. But I remember going to Sotheby's when it was on, I think it was Beverly Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go to the, there was a theater on, I think it was Beverly, that used to show old movies. And I remember I used to go to watch the old, like the Busby Berkeley or the old 30s movies, just look at all the stuff in the background, look at all the furniture and stuff. And then I go to Sotheby's, and I forget who turned me on to finding her. I think it was probably out of one of those art forums. It must have been.
How long did you hang on to that?
I don't know, probably 10 years.
So you were like this rocker guy, rock star guy, just strolling into Sotheby's, 17 years old. You probably...
Yeah, had hair down to here.
Yeah, and truthfully, like, and this is cool, this is one of the coolest things about you, we think. Like, you stroll into auctions and you're like, jeans, t-shirt, really low-key. Is that, nowadays, is that, like, when you were 17, you probably didn't even care about that. But now, is it, like, trying to be incognito?
No, it's just the way I am.
It's just the way you
are. I used to actually dress very nice. When I used to wear really good, I used to have Nudie. You know Nudie the Rodeo Tailor? I used to make my shirts.
Nudie, yeah.
No.
Nudie.
That's simple. You get up whenever you want.
He was the cowboy tailor, the guy that made like Porter Wagoner and all that, Graham Parsons and the Burrito Brothers. He made all their outfits. He used to make me shirts, and I used to actually dress pretty good. And then something happened. Yeah. But when I met my wife, I had like these holes in my pants and everything, and she like bought me all new clothes and all that stuff. And
then
like 5 years later, they're buying the clothes brand new with the holes in them. Okay, I'm ahead of my time.
But
she said, yeah, but those weren't designer jeans. They were just old jeans.
Right.
Like these. I'm wearing them now.
Your own rips.
No, I just like my son calls it my communist wardrobe. I have black t-shirts and jeans, and, you know, it's just kind of like just, but no, that's nothing to do with, being incognito. No.
Yeah.
I could be incognito by putting on a suit and a tie.
Nobody
would recognize me.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, so this question is going to come up anyway, it might also come up now. What is the best find you ever had? You got a timer on? I've heard you've told me a couple of really good stories.
Yeah, I can't think. There's just so many.
I really threw one at him, didn't I?
Yeah.
All right, let me rephrase.
I don't know. I can't think. I found a painting. Okay, here's a good story.
Okay.
I was in L.A., and there's this flea market in L.A. called the Fairfax High School Flea Market.
Huh.
It's really cool.
Okay.
And you have to get there early. Get there at 8 o'clock.
Mm.
And it's small, but everybody there is really... you know, has good taste, and they sell good stuff for, reasonable. It's easy, you have to get up at 4 in the morning with your flashlight. And plus, I like to go to Cantor's and eat breakfast. Cantor's is the famous deli on,
I've heard of that.
On Fairfax. Been there forever. And I remember going back to Santa Monica, or back to Venice, where I was staying at the time. I was living at Claire Falkenstein's house. You know Claire Falkenstein, the artist?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was living in her place. She was a friend of mine. And she had a place on Brook and Pacific in Venice. And I remember getting on the freeway and it was stopped dead. So I went down Sunset Boulevard. Anyway, to make a short story long, I see this little sign by UCLA that says estate sale. I go in. I remember going up this driveway to this place. It's a Sunday afternoon, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And
second day of the sale?
Yeah, or maybe even third day. And I remember driving this mile-long driver to get into this huge Paul Williams mansion. Paul Williams was a real famous black architect.
Huh.
Or just an architect, but he just happened to be black. It was just this amazing architect in L.A. in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. In fact, he's the guy that did the thing in LAX, the big...
Really?
Everybody thinks it's Saarinen.
Uh-huh.
The big... thing, but that was actually Paul Williams, an amazing architect.
Exactly.
It just happened to be a Paul Williams house, which I was kind of like, that was kind of cool right then and there. And I remember I walked into the place and the guy had four paintings by this really bad Mexican abstract painter. Although they were valuable, I mean, not super valuable. They were worth like, maybe $15,000 to $2,000 a piece. The guy had four of them and he wanted $1,000 a piece for them. That's all he had. Everything else was gone. I remember I walked in there and the guy's doing a crossword puzzle. He goes, hey, dude, everything's gone except these bad Mexican abstract paintings. I said, oh, yeah, I recognize them.
But you didn't tell him that.
No, I knew the name. He knew the name. I want $1,000 a piece for him. I go, well, you know, what do you do for all of them? And he says, well, I got three more upstairs.
Oh.
And that was it. The only thing in the house. I went up there's this little abstract painting. Little meaning by, you know, like maybe, you know, like 15 by 20 or something. Little abstract painting. Oh, man, this is cool. I didn't know who it was. I said, man, this is really beautiful. That's the eye, you know, looking at stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I found over the years that if it's a really good painting and you know how to identify a really good painting, it usually is a really good painting. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like people need to know names and they need to look at stuff. Yeah, you just need to know what a good piece of artwork is. Chances are it is somebody good.
There's a lot of book buyers, as they say, that just look at the signature.
Yeah,
don't even pay attention to what the artwork
looks like. Don't even look at the piece.
Mm-hmm. Something.
And that's where they go wrong.
Anyway. So I said, well, how much is this? And he goes, I tell you what, you buy all these. The guy's name is Leonardo Nierman. Not Leroy Nierman. Leonardo Nierman.
Close enough.
He's a Mexican abstract painter. Mm-hmm. And he's, I'm not going to say. I mean, it's okay.
Had a lot of them.
It's okay. Yeah, you guys had a lot of them.
Yeah.
But
he said, if you buy all of them.
I'll give you this. So I did. I took him over to a friend of mine who has an auction house in Ventura, a guy I've known forever.
Mm-hmm.
And can I say names?
Sure.
Clutch Sierlak.
He paid you, right? Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, he's an old friend of mine. In fact, he gave my son his first job.
Oh.
Huh.
Yeah. And I said, well, I'll just, if I run these to Clutch Sierlak, I mean, I'll make at least $500 a piece times seven, $3,500. Not such a bad day for taking the wrong way home.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did it. My youngest daughter, April, was about 3 months away from being born. And so my wife was just...
So it was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. She would just sit there and, you know, be pregnant and do stuff. You know, here in this house. And I remember I brought this painting home, and I said, God, this is a really good painting. And so she said, well, I'm not doing anything. I'll do some research on it. So then she called me, like, about the next day or so, and she says, and of course, at this point, I was back in San Francisco.
Okay.
She says, well, I just talked to Christie's Milan, and they gave me €160,000 estimate.
4 years ago. Jeez, Monique.
So that was maybe the best one.
Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty good.
So, of course, I ran back and wrote the guy a little bit more money in 2 years. Sorry.
Oh, there's a lot of people that...
No, that didn't happen. No, I thought about it. But hell, 400 miles is 400 miles, right?
You know?
I gave him $700 for those crappy Mexican paintings.
You know what? My dad used to do that. He used to, if something sold for a lot of money, he used to actually go back and give the people money. And one time, this woman said, well, what did it sell for? And started cussing them out.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah, that happens. I found it, like, I had a friend one time who bought a really good painting at a garage sale. He put it in the car and went back and gave the guy an extra $200 and said, thanks. And the guy, like, blew a gasket and wanted the painting back.
Ooh.
It's better to just be the stealth bomber.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's your friends and stuff, I mean, you all different. You know. I mean, it's just, you know, you go, I mean, you know, I mean, the people tell you what they want for it, so you give them the money, you know, and they're happy usually.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if you went in there as a professional and offered their money, then offered them an amount, and they accepted, and it was...
Oh, well, that's
a whole
other thing. Isn't that a crime?
I believe that's called, yes.
Yeah.
What is that called? Not collusion.
There was an old, this is pretty funny, we were talking about Leroy Nierman. Do you remember the Zucker brothers? They did, like, Airplane.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, they did a movie early on. I think it might have even been one of their first movies. It was called Top Secret.
Huh.
And it had Omar Sharif.
Yeah, I saw it.
And Val Kilmer.
Really? I love Airplane. I've got to see this.
But it was, like, the spy movie, and it was, like, really funny.
Didn't it have, like, a cow on the picture?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Well, I remember one part of the movie, they were doing, like, a Nazi-type interrogation scene, and they came in, and the guy says, we've tried everything, he won't talk. And then the commandant said, well, have you shown him the Leroy Nierman prints? Oh, shit. That was a funny thing.
That's a movie.
So as far as auctions, did you just go to auctions all these years? And
you know, I really didn't start going to auctions until regularly until I really moved up here with Butterfield, because you know in LA there really wasn't any auctions back then.
Now, but I don't think Butterfield's
Abel, but Abel's used to be before the riots.
Mm-hmm.
which is kind of like a little, you know.
So when did you move up here?
I moved up here in 1986.
Okay.
I moved up here in 86.
And did you move up here for any specific reason? A woman, right?
Well, kind of. But I always liked San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I always liked San Francisco. My parents had a friend that was this aristocrat. And I remember when I was a little kid, and he used to have, like, the ascot.
No way.
He was this aristocrat, and he'd come over, and me and my brother, I remember I was, like, 4 years back to my memory, I remember everything. Mm-hmm. I remember him, he had lived in Paris and Rome and, you know, everywhere, and he told me and my brother one time, he gets down, he gets this skinny little finger with a diamond ring on, he's going, I've been everywhere, but San Francisco is the most beautiful city in the world.
Really?
And I remember that. And then in the 50s, my parents brought me to San Francisco. And then in the 60s, I was here for Haight-Ashbury and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just always liked San Francisco.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, but I grew up on the beach in Redondo Beach. I grew up right on the beach. So it's kind of, you know, it's pretty different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's all, as I have found since I've moved out here to California, that there's, it's a treasure trove of beautiful, decorative, and unusual European items that you just don't see, for instance, on the East Coast unless you're in New York. But the Eastern Seaboard, you really don't see the diversity of antiques as you do around here, and the modern things.
Yeah, well, there's just a lot of taste in this, you know. I mean, just a lot of different taste, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of different tastes.
Melting pots. You know,
So do you go through phases where you're like really, really into one designer or one artist and not anyone else?
No.
No? You're just across the board?
Yeah, I like pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I really do. I like the...
Have you ever collected like Asian art?
No, that's one thing I don't know. It's the one thing I don't know.
I mean, with your mind, I bet you'd be really good at it.
No, I just it confuses me.
He doesn't want to.
It confuses me.
Well,
he doesn't want to have that too.
No, I just I that's the one thing I don't know. I know Persian rugs fairly well. But who cares anymore, right? But Asian stuff, I never really, you know, I mean, I see a lot of Asian ceramics and stuff with really real beautiful glazes. But, you know, I bet you I walked by $1 billion worth of Asian stuff in my life and didn't, you know, take the time to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would like to know and you haven't delved into yet?
Nah, let me think.
No, yeah. Been there, done that.
No, I'm done. I'm done.
No, Dave, you still have so much to do.
No, I don't know. I can't think of what it is, though.
Now, so when you buy, I've seen you buy a couple of monstrosities at auction, you know, big pieces of furniture and things like that. Where do you have a store currently, or are you involved in a store?
I used to be part of X21 in San Francisco, and then when John died, I just kind of, it's kind of been in limbo for about nine months.
X21, by the way, like around the mission in San Francisco, is a playground. Have you been there?
I've seen the website. By the way, what is that website address?
I don't know.
It's cool. X21.
There goes your plug.
Yeah, there you go.
But the guy that I was telling you that told me about the fashion and every 20 years, he's actually the guy that named X21. It was weird because my old partner John ran into him and he needed a name for the store, and it was on the corner of X and 21st Streets in Sacramento. So he's not an X21. I'm like, same guy that told me about the fashion.
And this is
like, you know, 25 years later, and even maybe 30 years later, he's like, you know, coming up with, you know, the name X21.
That's nice.
I don't know that I don't. I don't know. I just buy stuff I like, I guess. I mean, I bought a big cabinet last week. I just thought it was amazing, but I don't know. I don't even know where it is. It's going to be big.
Did you pick it up?
No, I think it did get picked up. But did I buy something else or two?
Now, you ship things to different places, like, for instance, Chicago, you said. Other auction houses.
Yeah.
You buy something really good.
Well, you know, Rick Wright, I don't know if you know Wright's auction. I've known Rick Wright since he was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy. I remember when he was working with Don Treadway. You know, and he's a really neat guy, and I love him dearly. And Michael Jefferson, who also runs the place, has been friends of mine. And once in a while, I'll send him something. And L.A. Modern... Right. He's another kid I've known since he was 15 years old.
Really?
His brother was a friend of mine. Peter Locrio's L.A. Modern, his brother was a picker. Was a little, he's since passed, but his brother was a picker that was just the best picker that ever lived.
Really?
The best picker that ever lived.
For those of you who don't know, a picker is someone that plays finds
banjo.
Things. Yeah, yeah. Basically someone that goes to estate sales or knocks on doors or finds things, basically. That's
or plays a banjo. I said that one time. I told somebody I was a picker, and he goes, "Will you play banjo, son?" Yeah, I don't play banjo.
It's so refreshing that, I mean, Dave's so, he's not going to plug any website because he doesn't know it.
He doesn't even know his own website.
It's got me thinking here. I did buy something else from you guys, and I don't know what happened to it.
Oh,
here we go.
Maybe we should think about that.
There goes that photographic memory.
Oh, no, that's right. I got the cabinet. That's right. And Benson picked it up.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, the old photographic memory started, you know. Starting to fade in my old age.
Yeah, that's okay. So I think we're going to just about wrap this up. We're right around 40-something minutes. Is there anything you'd like to add or any type of, you know, like we just asked, what do you think the future is of people collecting? I know the Internet.
The universe.
The Internet's changed everything. You guys keep talking while I think about it.
Okay. And,
I think hog oilers are coming back.
Really?
You know what hog oilers are?
Yeah.
I don't know, you do. I think those are coming back. I think everybody should collect hog oilers.
All right, there you go. From Dave like, Shaw.
And Griswold, like Griswold number 4 skillets.
That's like that.
There you go. I remember my friend, my old partner and friend John, he lived in Placerville. You know, Placerville is like, you know, where you go,
Apple country.
Go to live when you marry your cousin or something
like
that.
Yeah, no offense, Placerville.
He used to go to the flea markets, and a lot of the older retiring people would take the old saw blades and paint scenes.
Oh, yes.
Ever seen that stuff?
Oh.
I think those are going to be collectible. But it's so funny because his favorite thing was coming up to the people going, "These things still sharp?" And the people would go like, "Oh, you don't want to use these." Just kick out of that.
Well, they do the two man and the buck saws too. They were definitely.
Oh yeah, yeah, they do that too.
Nice little country scenes.
This is no accounting for bad taste.
What about the day when those silhouettes that they used to put up against the wall of the man outside with his wife and all that, or the sheep? That was a real trend. Those are going to be
sheep?
Collectible. Haven't you ever seen the little sheep they used to put in the front yard? The little.
No. I have no
idea.
It's kind of like, oh, you know, maybe it's an
it
East Coast
thing. Must be an East Coast thing. Yeah. Because they steal them out of the front yards here in Oakland.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
I think it, I actually think what's trendy and what's going to continue, going to be trendy is people discovering like painting and sculpture and stuff. I think that's going to be trendy. I think the stuff that's already been creative is still going to be trendy. In other words, like people every day discover artwork and paint and sculpture and realize there's a little more soul to it than some, you know, hog oilers. You know?
I'm glad you didn't say Avon bottles.
Avon bottles.
Yeah. Jim Beam bottles.
Beanie babies are hot.
Yeah, they're going to be great.
Oh, that's when I want to go out.
What, Beanie Babies?
The day Beanie Babies.
Yeah, maybe.
Breaks an auction record, that's the day that
I'll tell you, I wouldn't know a Beanie Baby if I saw one.
Good for you.
I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's, it's funny because there's a lot of furniture designers that just make chairs in their instant classics, like even at Rick Wright's auctions. I mean, they're selling chairs
like in
2007 that are bringing like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
That's interesting.
You know, so I don't know. I just think it's just people's interest needs to be, you know, always piqued with something new or something.
And when you're saying that in particular, are you saying also, is that also like a little bit of a borrowed design from someone, or is that someone's complete creation?
Well, you know, there's this one guy that does like and he doesn't like hide it, like he takes off in the zigzag chair, the retail chair. And, you know, so, but some of it's pretty cool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You never know. New or old, borrowed or new.
It's more like, I think it's back to my thing about the fine art and the decorative art. Mm. I think that that's the one of the crossovers there. You've got a piece of furniture that's basically a sculpture.
Mm-hmm. I see that a lot of times. I see a really nice piece of furniture. We're talking about antiques, and I just think, wow, that was a work of art at its time. You know, really was.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's kind of what that is in a sense. It's like it's basically the crossing over from decorative art to fine art,
bridging the two.
Yeah, because it needs to happen.
Words of wisdom.
Yes. Well, Dave, it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah.
Should I put my clothes back on now?
Yeah.
The holy pants. Yes. Yes. All right.
Ribs.
I think this is going to be it.
Yeah, well, at least for now. I mean, David,
you want to do
it
again?
Yeah, we may. It's possible.
I mean, do this one over again. How do we do it again? I don't mean volume two. I mean, like, do this one over again.
No, this is great.
No, this is. I think this is good enough. So we are just about. This is Martin Willis
and Phyllis Cowan,
Dave Shaw, all signing off.
Today's show was brought to you by Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/auctionpodcast for your free audiobook download. There are over 75,000 titles to choose from. We thank you for listening today, and we hope you enjoyed the show.